Welcome to another episode of Kook Talk with Sutra and Hawk. Today we talked about Mike Leach leaving from Mississippi State and all that went with that. We talked Coach Nick Rolovich and the new era that's happening for Washington State and some Pac-12 stuff in general with our special guest star, Connor Halliday. So one word of warning, we did have some audio issues early on that kind of persisted throughout, and we actually had the thing chop off at the very end, so it'll end abruptly, but we're good for about an hour or so of content. So sit back, as always, relax, and enjoy.
Right?
We're back.
Connor Halliday, Cougasutra.
In the house.
We're back.
Ready to roll, 2020. I would say Happy New Year, but I don't think anyone says Happy New Year anymore, right? I mean, it's kind of like we're way past Happy New Year.
Yeah, way past Happy New Year. Sure, everybody's New Year's resolutions have already gone by the wayside, and we are back to normal life.
Right, and nothing going on in Coogville, right? Absolutely nothing.
Yeah,
just so quiet.
Nothing whatsoever.
Just dead.
Nothing to talk about, huh, boys?
Right. Well, let's talk about nothing, or let's talk about Leach, first and foremost. Obviously, now we have not talked since November 30th, if you guys can believe it. It's been like 6 weeks, and that was coming off the Apple Cup loss, of course, and we never talked about the bowl. We never talked about anything beyond that. So, obviously, Leach leaving is gigantic, and I don't know if, Connor, you want to start on some thoughts on that, or...
Yeah, sure.
As a former player.
Right. I think I just kind of going back to the bowl game for a second. You know, I think our fan base, or at least what it seemed like to me on Twitter, was pretty frustrated with that loss, and rightfully so. You know, I think some play calling, you know, decisions in the red zone definitely could have gone differently and helped us out a little bit. But when we got matched up with Air Force, I was nervous from the get-go, just in the sense of they were going to be really tough for our defense to stop. They were going to slow the game down. They were going to make it ugly. And that's exactly what they did. And they executed that game plan to a T. And we fed into it. That's the thing. When Leach isn't scoring points and isn't, you know, the offense isn't on the field, he gets antsy and he gets too aggressive with his play calls. And that's exactly what happened. And Air Force shoved it down our throat. I thought our guys played hard on defense. I thought they were just on the field for way too long and they didn't really have a chance. So moving on from the bowl game, I think everybody kind of had an idea that, you know, Leach had a chance of leaving. I personally thought it was going to be the Ole Miss job. I was a little surprised after Ole Miss had hired Lane Kiffin and kind of all the other positions were filled. I didn't really think Mississippi State was in the running. But obviously, I was wrong, and he's in Starkville, and we have Rolo and Pullman.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess I would just add that, I mean, the Ole Miss thing came out of the blue. Mississippi State. I mean, I thought he was going to Arkansas. I thought that was my pick for him. And then he actually did interview for that, apparently, in Lewiston back in December, quietly interviewed for that.
I thought Ole Miss first, Arkansas second.
Yeah.
And I didn't think anything about Mississippi State.
What do you think, Sutra?
Well, I mean, the thing that's so funny is that, you know, I thought that Leach was a perfect fit for Mississippi State the previous time that Mississippi State had a search.
Like 2 years ago.
Yeah. And so the moment that they fired Moorhead, I texted you, Sean, and I was like, all right, look, this thing is open. Leach could be on the move, and
we talked. We talked right after,
and then you know, about a few days later, the Cougars men's basketball team upset UCLA, and Leach went out and tweeted congratulations to Smith and the men's basketball team, and I texted you again, and I was like, he's never freaking leaving. Like he's totally all in.
He's so in. He's leaning into Washington State.
Just all in. And then a day later or a day and a half later, whatever, the guy that they had targeted that Feldman had said was the guy that they were targeting, the guy from the New England Patriots,
Judge
wound up taking the job to the New York Giants. And then they started talking about Sark. And I texted you and I said, this is starting to feel a lot like the Tennessee job. You know, that it just kind of felt like they were starting to go through their top choices and they weren't getting them. And shortly after that, I tweeted at Feldman and just and asked him, you know, what's the deal here? Is Leach just dead set on staying in Pullman? Because I don't understand about why it is that Mississippi State isn't you know, targeting Leach as their number one guy. And of course, no response. Literally a day later, he's the coach. So I wasn't surprised in the slightest after all those things happened. I think that he is, I think he's a perfect fit on paper for Mississippi State. I think that there's a really high potential that he is going to do anywhere from well to spectacularly well there, because I think that you know the Hogs on the defensive line are there in spades in the Southeast. They're consistently a top 25 team when it comes to recruiting every single year.
Even with Moorhead the last couple of years.
It's a good environment. They got good facilities. And so I think that he could do extraordinarily well there. And I also think that it could be a spectacular disaster. But I do think that it's a good hire. I do think it's a good fit for Leach. That side of the, you know, equation, I'm sure that we'll talk about some more too. I think the timing of his departure was ideal for everybody.
Well, and now to back it up, I mean, that when you called me, I don't know if you remember this. You told me flat out, you said, if they offer $5 million a year, he's gone.
He's gone.
You said that right out.
And that's exactly what they offered him.
And yep. I couldn't have agreed more at the time. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. I can totally see it, but I want to go back a little further.
Yeah.
There was a couple of things. There was Brenna Green from Spokane, I think Crem 2 maybe, said that, she had a little, like a 30-second interview with him when he was announced that he got that extra year tacked on. And he very much downplayed the whole thing and kind of grumbled, oh, it's already part of the deal. Like take it easy. It's not anything to get excited about. Thing. And then I saw John Canzano from the Oregonian wrote a story when Leach left, and he's got a friendship with Leach. Actually, he goes on his podcast or radio show or something, and he said that at the end of his article, he wrote that he congratulated Leach at the moment that Leach got this extra year added onto his contract, and all Leach said was, "I'm keeping my options open." He never said thanks. Mm. He never said, "Yeah, I'm happy to be here." He said, "I'm keeping my options open," which.
Interesting.
Yeah, and this was, you know, this was right around what, before the bowl game, right? Was when the extension was announced,
right?
Yeah.
So he was several weeks away from the Mississippi State thing. The other thing I'll add to the Mississippi State thing, I don't know if either of you guys saw the Peter King article on Monday. Peter King wrote a big article. One of the leads was the new coach for the Giants coming from the Patriots. This Joe Judge. He's an old or a Mississippi State guy. And the Mississippi State contingent actually went up to meet him in New York, actually, and interviewed him for the Mississippi State job, like right away, right after they fired Moorhead. They were right in front of him. And Judge said, "I'm interested. Everything looks good, but I got to go talk to the New York Giants." I mean, the New York Giants are essentially you know, they're as blue blood as you get in the NFL. And if they're calling, you got to take the call. So he went, interviewed with the Giants, blew him away, and got the job. And from that point, the Mississippi State contingent flew right down to Key West. They were on a plane. They got right on their plane and went right to Leach. So I know there were rumors about Sark. And in fact, I remember hearing Yogi Roth say, and Yogi is a pretty good friend of Sark, apparently. Sark thought he was like fast track for the job. Like it looked like he might get it. And Roth said before, right when Leach got the job, that he was like 24 hours away from getting the job with Sark. So I don't know what, if there was some kind of a verbal agreement on something or they were going down that road. I don't know. But anyway, it's just kind of interesting how all the dots connected. But it kind of steamrolled all of this that Judge took the Giants job because he was headed for Mississippi State if he didn't get it. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
So not to get off topic here, but what is I mean, what got Judge's name so hot? I mean, wasn't he coaching receivers for the Patriots?
Receivers are special teams.
And special teams.
Yeah. Well, he's this rising guy that they all talk about in back rooms, I guess. But, it's weird, isn't it? I mean, New England Patriots fans would be like, who?
Yeah, exactly.
They don't know who the hell Judge is.
Yeah, I was, and his name was just all over the place all of a sudden.
Yeah,
and to get the New York Giants job, I mean,
that's crazy.
Again, I mean, he is extremely unproven, in my opinion, to get that prestigious of a job. I mean, from receivers coach. I mean, I know he was, you know, he was co-special teams coordinator. Is that correct?
I don't know if maybe. I honestly don't know.
All I know is to go from a receiver position coach to the head coach of the New York Football Giants is one hell of a leap.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess, there's always some weird hires in the NFL. You're like, who are these? I mean, the guy, Matt LaFleur, coaching Green Bay. I don't know who the hell Matt LaFleur was until now. I mean, it's crazy. So
right.
You just never know. So anyway, Connor is what are your thoughts on Leach? Like, what did you feel as a former player, somebody who knows him? Have you heard from him since this, or he's probably got a million people to get in touch with, but.
Yeah. I mean, I sent him a text and said, congratulations. You know, he told me that, he told me that it was a very tough decision, that he loved his time in Pullman, but it was just timed. It was something he couldn't say no to.
Right.
I think that obviously he's shown that he can be successful wherever he goes, but I think this will be his first stop, at least as a head coach, at a position where he's going to be able to get athletes that can compete with who he's playing against. Now, obviously, you know, Mississippi State's got a little bit of ways to go, you know, to catch up to the Auburns, the Alabamas, you know, the Floridas. But he's in a region of the country to where he can attract, you know, a five-star receiver now. You know, he can get a guy from – you know, Miami, Florida, you know, a high school kid that's a top recruit in the nation that says, I want to go play receiver for Leach because I want to break every NCAA record there is. And I don't really think that was the case in Pullman. I mean, obviously, he always does a good job of recruiting receivers because of the offense he runs. But I think this place is the first time that he'll get to show the country of what his offense can really do with getting, you know, top tier athletes. And again, let me say, he's got a ways to go. You know, this is going to be a few years down the road where Mississippi State can talent wise can compete with everybody in the country. But he's at a place where he can attract top talent. And I think that's something he couldn't say no to.
Right. Well, he looks so happy. I mean, I know it's great to be wanted in life by your employer. And I mean, they literally rolled out the red carpet for him. But he looks rejuvenated and happy. And I mean, I know the money's great, but the exposure is even better. And he's in the big boy league. I mean, it's the SEC, and it's a whole new world for him. That's for damn sure.
Well, I think that, you know, the other part is that with the resurgence of Oregon and the type of recruiting that they were doing, and obviously there's been, you know, a potential shift at Washington with Peterson retiring, but obviously the recruiting that they've been doing, and then the imminent threat of USC at some point in time, you know, buying a Vowell and firing Helton and bringing somebody, you know, in who's going to recruit, you know, out of that place the way that that you should recruit out of that place. The opportunity in the window to be able to win a Pac-12 championship and have a shot at a playoff, arguably it already closed for him. And you know, the thing is at Washington State is that the only way that you have an opportunity to be able to make the playoff is to be able to win the league. And at Mississippi State, there's a pathway to the playoff that is 11-1 and being a non-division winner. That same season that he had at Texas Tech, in the Crabtree years, in the college football playoff era in the SEC, lands you a playoff spot. And if they expand to 8 teams, which, you know, a lot of folks think that they might do by 24, 25 or whatever else, then, you know, his type of team, you know, at even something like 10-2, could potentially be a really compelling team for an 8th spot. And so I think that the opportunities that he has to be able to kind of get into a playoff has got more, more possibilities. Although I think, you know, there's a good argument about whether or not, you know, it's more possible to be able to win a Pac-12 title at Washington State versus to go 11-1 in the SEC when, you know, say for example, next year, Mississippi State has back-to-back road games against LSU and Alabama. I mean, good luck with that.
Yeah.
I mean, good luck about going up against DBU and then coming into Tuscaloosa and trying to be able to compete with those guys. I mean, you know, so it's a great challenge, but it's good for him. I mean, my big thing coming out of that I tweeted out at the end of the Mighty Cheez-It Bowl is that, you know, I was really interested to be able to see about, you know, what was going to happen with the team over this next year. But I was hoping that, you know, that interest could involve some sort of excitement by the time that spring ball came around, because, this season was super frustrating. And I think that the hard thing for any type of fan base is, you know, how it is that you deal from, you know, going from being on, you know, a championship level and then dropping off, especially when it is that you've been playing championship level football and never won a championship. There's a championship or quasi championship fatigue that goes with it, where it is that you start to view, you know, a 6-6 or 7-5 season, as something that's, you know, something other than a great success. It becomes blasé and the fan base gets apathetic and, you know, throwing for 5,500 yards and 49 touchdowns starts to become a lot less meaningful. And I think that as a fan base, I think that we got there to the point where, you know, we'd become desensitized to the numbers and just a lot of the other, you know, antics and frustration with, you know, losing all those Apple Cups and not being able to adjust. I think that the act had worn thin. And so I think that it's great timing for both parties to have the change come now.
Speaking of the, I just want to add this note. Speaking of the act wearing thin, I know that the three of us and a lot of the fan base that really understands football and whatnot really celebrated Gordon's season this year. But I really, really felt that a lot of the fan base didn't understand what he did this year. I mean, to have your first year of starting, you know, Division I, you know, Pac-12 football, playing at the highest level in a very tough conference, and I mean, to put up the numbers that he put up, and a lot of the games, you know, we lost in very, you know, very few amount of points. I mean, Sutra, you had the number. I mean, how many, we had like three losses for a combined, like under 10 points or something like that. And he absolutely willed this team to a bowl game. I mean, obviously he had some help with Borgie. I thought the offensive line played amazing this year, but his leadership, his competitiveness, and his accuracy, because, I mean, it's clear that Anthony Gordon does not have a very big arm. You know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that. But the guy's pinpoint accuracy, his anticipation of throws, and I was a little bit bummed to see that his season wasn't as celebrated as it should have been. I mean, heck, the Northwest Sports Award, I mean, he wasn't even and granted, Borgie is a heck of an athlete, and I'm not taking anything away from him, but to throw for, how many yards did he throw for? 5,400 yards?
It's 5,500
yards, and I mean, so that's 100 yards less than the Heisman Trophy winner. With two fewer games. Wow. And he's not even – and I know this is just a local award and it doesn't mean anything, but to not be nominated for the sport – what's that? Is it Inland – what's the
– Seattle Times Sports Star of the Year Award.
Yeah,
whatever that's called. Yeah.
Morgan Weaver won it, and rightfully so. But for Anthony Gordon to not even be nominated for that is absolutely criminal.
Yeah. Well, and I think though to Sutra's point, I mean, I have to say it, and I have to agree. I think the losing makes the numbers. Now that we were 8 years into Leach, the numbers were impressive, but then I think we were numb to them a little bit. I think as a fan base specifically, and Connor, I can say back to when you first started, we were celebrating your numbers the first, you know, your second year in, because we hadn't seen it before and the team wasn't winning yet. And as you improved and your numbers grew, you got us, you know, you helped get us to six wins in a bowl game that second year.
Right.
So it was new though. And by year eight, it's like, I don't know. I guess I don't know. It was, I mean, gosh, I greatly appreciate it. I think, I mean, all of you guys did, I know. But I can understand where there was some numbness to it, I guess.
I think there's a fatigue and a malaise. And I think that 6-6, when a lot of us were thinking about the potential for double digit wins, was a hard pill to swallow. I think 6-6 this next year for Leach would have resulted in a whole bunch of empty seats. And a whole lot of questions about whether or not the program was really starting to deteriorate under his watch, particularly given the play of the defense. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. You know,
and recruiting.
And recruiting, you know, 60th ranked class following, you know, an 11-2 season. I mean, you know, there's a general overall sense of malaise about the program's trajectory. Whereas, you know, Rolla goes out and has a 6-6 and 7-5 year next year. That's going to be viewed as a big success, and 8-4 the year after that is going to be viewed as progress. It's not going to be, oh, well, why aren't we playing, you know, against Washington for, you know, a trip to the Pac-12 title game. That's not going to be where people's focus and energy is at. And so it's a great reset for us right at the time where we needed to have it. And it's great that we were able to have the 11-2 year and that Leach didn't take the Tennessee job. And that we were able to have that kind of a year and that kind of exposure and Coug stock and, you know, all that stuff that was nothing short of amazing and would have never happened, you know, without Leach.
Yeah, I think you guys are 100% right. I just wanted to say that, and I think you are right, that everybody did have fatigue with the numbers and not winning enough games. I'm just, you know, trying to say from Gordon's, you know, standpoint and a quarterback's standpoint, you know, he can't win those games on his own.
No.
I mean, he sure as hell tried. And I just felt that we took a one of probably, you know, because we only went 6-7, you know, it's not all the way up there. But I would honestly argue that was a top 20 best college football seasons ever by a quarterback. You know, obviously this is just numbers wise. Obviously you need to win more games to be going down as a legend like that, but he can only do so much. And that was one of the 20th best seasons by a quarterback in the history of college football.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, one of the artifacts of Leach leaving now is that season is going to grow in infamy over the years, because nobody's going to touch it. I mean, I suppose that it's possible that, you know, as long as Harrell is down at SC, that, you know, maybe Slovis makes a run at 5,000 yards or whatever else. But that, you know, that record is gonna stand there for a really long time, if not forever, as is 734 yards or whatever else, a single game thing. That record is going, at least conference wise, it's going nowhere. And over time, you know, that legacy will start to get greater, and we all will look back and say, you know, that was really an unbelievable run. And I think that Leach's legacy is going to be strengthened as a result of the fact that he left now.
And that's, you know, nobody likes, especially the few episodes I've been on this podcast, nobody likes to hear anybody talk about themselves. But the one thing I will say with Gordon's season, and then seeing, you know, like Joe Burrow's numbers this Monday, that's one thing that I will always be a little bit, you know, stale about is, you know, if I don't break my leg, I would have been the only quarterback in college football history to throw for 6,000 yards. And so that's one that's always a tough pill to swallow. And again, nobody likes to hear anybody talk about themselves, so I'll shut up. But that's the one. But that is the one thing that, because in 2014, you know, shoot, the team, we weren't going to a bowl game. The team was not very talented, you know. So that is, you know, one thing that I really would have been able to hang my hat on. And, you know, to be the only person in the history of college football to do something is pretty special. And, you know, I was on, all I would have had to do was throw for like 200 yards in the last three games to get there. So, you know, anyway, but I just wanted to mention that with the Gordon stuff.
Well, we'll always have 734.
Yeah.
And we'll have the bowl game your second year. And I, you know, I think the narrative though is important, because like you just said, I mean, Gordo did what he could, and in three of those losses, he's off the field with the lead. He got us the lead, right?
Yep.
Oregon, Arizona State, and UCLA. Although I know UCLA was the last, there was another a strip sack fumble. But to your point though, like, okay, let's say the narrative, let's say they win those three games. Okay. Instead of going 6-6 in the regular season, say we go 9-3 and maybe we lose the bowl game, or I don't know what we would do, but let's say we lose the bowl game. But think, what difference would it be with his numbers and 9 wins under his belt, let's say.
Right.
Could be considerably different. And who knows, you know, what, how he's going to be looked upon down the road. I mean, but no, and he was fantastic, and he's done things we've never seen, and maybe we won't ever see it again. I really don't know. But Rollo, what do you guys think?
Sutra, do you want to go, or do you want me to start?
Why don't you go ahead and start, and I'll rain on your parade afterwards.
Okay, awesome. Well, this actually, it's kind of funny. I played with a guy, Jordan Pooh Robinson is his name. Wanted to give him a little bit of a shout out. He's from Maui, and he was in Travis Long. He was in the recruiting class with Travis Long and Jeff Toole and Gino Simone. So he started at WSU with us and then ended up transferring back to UH when Wolf got hired. And Rollo is a family friend. I don't want to misquote it, but he's related to him in one way or another.
Wow.
And so I got some good information on him. He's very, very, very aggressive. You know, if we thought, you know, the amount of times that Leach went for it on fourth down was ridiculous, we're going to be seeing the exact same thing. for example, in his first game, his opening game as a head coach, he opened the game with an onside kick. He ended up, and they got it. But I mean, to have the cojones on your first head, it was his first head coaching job, to your opening game, call an onside kick. I mean, that's just awesome, in my opinion.
Wow.
He was on Chris Alt's staff at Nevada. So he has a history of running a lot of pistol stuff. When he first got hired in Hawaii, that was in 2016. So he was there for 3 years. And in the first 2 years, he really ran a balanced offense. I mean, they went under center. They tried to pound the rock, you know, play action, seven-step drops off of it. And obviously they weren't having very much success. So he went 100% to the run and shoot this year. And they, I mean, had an absolutely unbelievable year. He's has one of – there's only three teams in college football history to have a 5,000-yard passer, 2,000-yard receivers, and a 1,000-yard runner. And that's Hawaii was one of those teams. So we're going to see a very aggressive offense. Again, like Leach, he doesn't have anything to do with the defense. He'll hire a D coordinator and let them do whatever, you know, they feel is necessary. But we will see. The one thing that I heard and that I loved to hear was the biggest difference between him and Leach is he will run the football. He does exactly what he needs to do to win the game. You know, he's not as stubborn as Leach is, and we're running exactly what we're going to run no matter who we're playing. Rolo is very game plan oriented. So, you know, if we're playing Arizona and they're running cover three 73% of the time, you know, in our game plan, we're going to have a bunch of cover three beaters. You know, he doesn't have a play sheet that's only 10 plays long and we're running those 10 plays over and over and over. He will take what the defense gives him. And he really runs the football. If he's got a running back and an O-line that can do it, he'll run the ball 45 times a game. That's something that Leach obviously wouldn't do. So that's pretty exciting to hear with Borgie's, you know, with having Borgie for two more years and the amount of talent that we have on the offensive line. and the last thing I wanted to say is the other difference between him and Leach is he's got a bunch of trick plays that he'll run. He's got some hook and ladder things. He's got, you know, a bunch of different trick plays as to where Leach, you know, would make me roll in the sand pit if I called a double move and even threw a touchdown.
Well, I mean, the numbers are fascinating. Just looking last year, that Cole McDonald threw for over 4,000 yards and 33 touchdowns, but he ran for 383 yards and 7 touchdowns himself, the quarterback.
Yeah, that was the other thing I forgot to say. He runs – if he's got a quarterback that can run, he runs the quarterback a lot. Cole McDonald was the second leading rusher on Hawaii's team last year.
Yeah.
They'll run a lot of read option, but they will also run – a lot of quarterback power, you know, with a pulling guard and, you know, the back leading up the field. So he's not afraid to run the quarterback if that's something that the quarterback can do. The biggest thing that I took from the conversation that I had with, you know, my buddy that's related to him and a huge, you know, Hawaii football fan, is he does what is best for the talent that what he has, in the sense of where Leach is going to run his offense no matter what. And, you know, these are just two different schools of thoughts. I'm not saying that Rolo's is better than Leach's at all. I'm just saying that Rolo will take what his team does best and mold his offense around it, which is something to, as a player, that is awesome to hear. That is so awesome to hear. So I know the players loved playing for him at UH, and I'm excited to see what he does here.
Well, their leading rusher had over 900 yards, 5.2 yards per carry, and 8 touchdowns. They had 3 1,000-yard receivers. Their fourth receiver had 913 yards.
Yeah, so I think really it was impressive. I think it was 2000. It was the 2018 year where he had the 5,000-yard passer, two receivers that had over 1,000 yards, and the running back ran for over 1,000 yards. And, wow. I mean, just put that into perspective. There's been 150 years of college football. Only 3 teams in the history of college football have ever done that. And I'm blanking on – I should have wrote – Jordan told me who the other two were. I'm blanking on them, but – I just think that's unbelievable. So we're not, we shouldn't have any dip in, offensive production, at least from a coaching standpoint.
Right. Sutra, what do you think?
So many thoughts, a little time. So a couple things. First of all, in terms of the entire hiring, process, which, you know, as Chun noted today in the introductory presser, you know, was all of 1 week. It feels like it was a month. It was all of 1 week. It's pretty remarkable. Yeah. I think one of the inside things that was pretty amazing about it is that I started getting tipped off by quote unquote sources on Friday night. And by Saturday morning, I was already told that Rolo was already the guy.
And it was going to be Monday
that it was going to be announced. And then, you know, you have Grinch saying that he decided that he wasn't going to interview, which is the classic pullout when you know you're not going to get the job. It was pretty impressive, that the Twitter universe of people across the board who were getting tipped off about who the hire was going to be, that everybody actually didn't get on the internet and just started tweeting it out right, left and center. And so that process I thought was pretty remarkable. When I first heard about his name, I was completely underwhelmed. The more that
you were in Hawaii, by the way,
yeah. And the more that I thought about it, the more that I kind of liked it. And one of the reasons why it is that I liked it is because of the fact that I felt like he was a guy that if he had some success, that he would stick around. And the second thing was that I felt like he fit what is, you know, the more popular emergent model of college football staffing, which is that you pay less money for a head coach, which then enables you to be able to pay much more money and even a significant amount of money to coordinators, and also have, you know, money for staff and recruiting resources and whatever else. And so I liked, you know, the idea that Rolo might be able to come in, might be able to quadruple his salary, and then, you know, leave a lot of money, you know, left over for coordinators. When I saw the particulars or the outline or the tentative agreement of his contract, I was a little bit taken aback by the fact that the guy's making $3 million a year and is not a coordinator and or a position coach like Leach was. Because Leach, if you remember, was hired in at 2.8, but Leach was doubling as an offensive coordinator and a quarterbacks coach.
Leach was even lower than that. I think he was low twos,
right,
actually.
Which then, you know, in turn, you know, enables, which means that the big ticket hire that's left over is, you know, the defensive coordinator. And so that kind of helps to be able to offset the fact that you're gobbling up so much of the entire pie on your head coach. I am greatly concerned that the salary structure is so high that it's going to make it hard to be able to find the kind of guys that are A, going to be successful, and B, are going to be able to be retained. Because, you know, one of the difficulties that we had under Leach is that we lost assistant coaches potentially because of the fact that they didn't want to be there anymore, but also because of the fact that we couldn't pay to retain them. And that becomes more of a problem when it is that the head coaching salary is really high, because, you know, you think about like the three things that an assistant coach has to do. They have to be able to identify talent that fits the system. Then they need to be able to recruit them in, and then they need to be able to coach them up once it is that they get there. And if those kind of guys just grew on trees, there'd be a lot more successful football programs out there, especially in places like Washington State. And, you know, as great as it is, and, you know, in some ways that Leach is leaving, I mean, Leach is one of the greatest offensive minds and identifiers and developers of talent at the quarterback position, which obviously for his system and arguably for any college football program is the most important position on the field. Mason Miller is a top five, top six offensive line coach in the country that was A-list at all of those three functions, and we're losing it. And Phelps couldn't recruit worth a lick. But in terms of coaching, I mean, he's a fantastic D-line guy. And prior to that, Joe Salvea was a fantastic D-line guy. I mean, in Leach's early years, the only thing they talked about that was good was Connor and our defensive line play. So I think, you know, we have, and Rolo has, you know, a really, really tall order in terms of, you know, being able to especially identify coaches on the offensive line, the defensive line, and obviously defensive coordinator. And then I just have huge questions about, you know, whether or not we have stuff structured in terms of how it is that we've structured, you know, Rolo's deal relative to the entire football budget, about whether or not we're going to be able to retain those folks. I think on the bright side of things, you know, it seems like he's won the room with the players, and that's far more important than winning the press conference. And I thought that he had some nice lines today, but I thought that his performance, you know, overall in the presser today, I found it to be pretty underwhelming. But he clearly has won with the players. And I think that, you know, the big question in terms of, you know, how his tenure is going to be viewed is really going to be about who he hires in these critical staff positions, particularly on defense, but also on offensive line, and how it is that the team does in the first year. You know, a lot of times, you know, coaches can, I think, you know, really afford to be able to kind of have that adjustment year and have it not necessarily be predictive of what it is that they're going to do moving forward. I don't think that that's the case with him. I think that there's a tremendous amount of pressure on him to be able to win in this first year, in large part because of the fact that I think that our recruiting class this year is very, very similar to kind of some of the transitional recruiting classes that we saw in the past. And if he's not able to make serious hay in the fall, as well as relationships with those juniors, soon to be seniors in the spring, I think that we're going to be looking at a massive talent deficit on this roster, particularly when it is that you look at how limited we were talent-wise, or maybe it was just experience. It looked like talent and size on the defensive line, linebackers, and in the defensive backfield. There is so much work that needs to be done there. And so he's going to need to be able to work wonders in the JC ranks this spring. He's going to need to be able to get in on the portal. And we're going to need to be able to see, you know, a significant improvement really on the defensive side of the ball. But we're going to need to see, you know, not very much of a drop off on the offensive side of the ball, in spite of the fact that we have not one quarterback that's even served as a D1 backup yet. So I think, I mean, I'm excited really on one hand, but on the other hand, like,
sound like a guy who just sold all his Rolo stuff.
I'm just saying like I'm excited on one hand, and I think that, and I see a way that it definitely could work. But I think that there's just a lot of question marks there. And I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, and one thing I was a little surprised about when you guys say that Grinch, like, took his name out of the ring because he thought that somebody else was getting the job. I don't agree with that. I think he declined the interview because he didn't want the job. I had a buddy that I played with at WSU. He was a walk-on while I was there that was a GA on Leach's staff when Grinch was the defensive coordinator there. And Grinch and his wife, it's not that they hated Pullman, but they just didn't like being so far away from family. You know, their families in the Midwest, if I'm not mistaken, or if it's not the Midwest, it's back east.
Yeah, they're outside of Columbus.
Yeah, so I know that his wife really, really, really didn't like being that far away from family. And so I really just think that he didn't want the job. I think that he felt that, you know, his name is obviously very hot right now. And if he can turn with how bad Oklahoma has been defensively these last, you know, 6-7 years, if he can turn that place into, you know, a powerhouse on defense, then they're with what they do on offense with Lincoln Riley, they're going to be winning national championships, and he's going to get a head coaching job at wherever he wants, you know, at a big, big, big time school. So I felt like he thought that him taking the head coaching job here at WSU wouldn't be a smart career move for where he's at right now. I don't think that he felt that someone else was going to be hired and that he took his name out of the hat or out of the ring. So I, with everything that I'm super excited about with what Rolo does offensively, I don't know if disappointed is the right word, but I felt that with what Leach had done here, you know, for the past, gosh, he was here for 8 years, and that seems like it just went by so it's hilarious. You know, I can think of the day that he got hired and his introductory press conference when I was sitting in there as a redshirt freshman, you know, going to be a sophomore. It feels like yesterday, but I was a little surprised that with where Leach has got the program, you know, 5 straight bowl games, we won 11 games last year. I think Rolo's a great fit for us, but I thought that we could have attracted a little bit of a bigger name. And that's not at all a negative thing, you know, in the sense of Rolo is a great coach and will be a great fit for us. I just thought that, you know, even maybe in the rumor mill, you know, we would have been able to generate, you know, more interest and bigger names that wanted to take the job. And the fact is, that wasn't the case. So, you know, as a program and as a fan base, I think we need to realize that we've had a heck of a lot of success lately, but we still have a ways to go to become one of the jobs that people want.
I think that, to be fair to that point, I think that timing had a lot to do with that, because you're talking about mid-January, essentially, having an opening when the carousel starts, you know, Thanksgiving or shortly thereafter. All those chairs are moving around. Guys were throwing their hat in the ring for different Power 5 jobs and whatnot. And I think we were in a position where it's like, okay, what Power 5 coach are we going to reach out and grab? That's a very difficult question, because it seems like everybody's so embedded now wherever they are, unless there's a crazy Joe Moorhead type situation at Mississippi State.
I didn't think we were going to be able to get a big name head coach from somewhere. I just meant like a, you know, an offensive coordinator from, you know, a big time Power 5 school, or a defensive coordinator from a big time Power 5 school. That's just all I meant. I knew there was no way in heck we were going to get, you know, a big name Power Five head coach. I didn't think that was possible at all. Okay. I just meant, up and coming, like a Joe Brady type. You know, obviously we weren't going to get Joe Brady with the opportunities that he has.
No.
But I just meant, something like that. A guy, Dan Mullen's offensive coordinator at Florida, something like that.
So now, not to spill any beans on any sources or whatever else, but Sutra can speak to this. In 2017, I think you were essentially told that Alex Grinch was the backup plan once Leach was going to take the Tennessee job. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
But that was 2017.
And that was also that was before Chun was hired. We didn't have an AD.
You're right. And I mean, Grinch is now embedded at Oklahoma. He's making $1.4 million a year to be a DC. I mean, Connor's point is a great one. It's like, I thought from the beginning, when all this Leach speculation even started this year, that I thought Grinch has higher sights for whatever is coming next. But 2 years ago, it was a whole different deal. I mean, what was Grinch making at his top salary at Washington State? Wasn't like $800,000 even, was it?
No.
600,000. Yeah. So it would have been a fantastic move for him at that moment to just slide right into the job, but. It's tough because I think you're right though, in that I think we were dealt with the reality of non-Power Five head coach or up and coming coordinator, the best we could do. But then again, on a source to Sutra, I think weren't you told that one of Chun's top priorities was a head coach?
Yes.
So whatever the case may be, it sounds like Chun wanted a head coach for this job, not a promotion from the coordinator ranks, which, obviously the way how fast this moved and what we were hearing Friday night, Saturday morning, this moved very fast. Like they may have even had some sort of these are the parameters. I'll take it. Let's meet in Vegas and sign, let's go. I mean, it might've been that fast, that done. So I'm excited. I'm excited for him. I've watched since Sutra, you told me about that last weekend. I've been watching a lot of video and reading a lot of stuff about him. He seems like a tough players coach, which I like. It seems like it's a good mix. I love the offense. I love the idea of the run and shoot and what they can do differently. And Connor, you may want to speak to that a little bit about the differences in the offensive schemes, about what you know about the run and shoot, or even mixing some of the principles together.
I can definitely speak to it. And but before I get into that, I want to say that I am absolutely thrilled with this hire. I think that this is an absolute home run for us. I just thought that with where the program had got, we would have been able to pull, a Florida offensive coordinator, an SEC offensive coordinator, something like that. But anyway, the run and shoot and the air raid principles are a little similar, but they're quite a bit different for the most part. The air raid wants to hit, we've heard it how many different times. Leach say, balance in my offense is every skill position guy touching the football, in the run and shoot. And the other thing about that is Leach really likes to attack the middle of the field. And Leach is going to run what he runs. We're always going to run 95, which is the Y cross play. We are always going to run mesh, which is where the two slot receivers cross and they sit in zone or they run in man. We're always going to run those plays. The run and shoot is going to run what works best against the defense that we're playing. There's still concepts of the run and shoot that Rolo will call no matter what. And he's got third down calls that he's always going to go to. A lot of things you're going to see are really quick passes. The run and shoot gets the ball out a little bit quicker than the air raid. You're going to see a lot of, three by one formations where, You know, we got trips, three receivers to the right and one to the left. And if we have it all off coverage, you know, the outside receiver and the middle slot are going to run seam routes to run the defense off. And the number three guy is going to run a little speed out, and we're going to get him the ball and let him run. That's a big part of the run and shoot offense, is get the ball out as fast as possible. And then the other part of it that we didn't see a lot in the air raid is, because Rolo will run the ball quite a bit, is he has a bunch of play action deep shot plays, which as a quarterback is very, very, very exciting, because we've got a running back to where, you know, if we get in the first half of a football game and we set up in the pistol formation and we're running inside and outside zone to death, and a defense is having trouble stopping it, you know, we're bringing those two safeties start to creep up. And if we get those safeties, you know, at 7 to 8 yards, we're going to fake that outside stretch from the pistol and throw a deep home run post right behind that. As a quarterback, that's an absolute dream to be able to have a play action game. I know when I was playing quarterback at Washington State, every single from 2012 to 2014, we were last in the nation in percentage of play action pass plays.
Wow.
And we were last in the nation by a good margin. The one that sticks out in my mind that I remember in 2014, 4% of our passes were play action. The next closest was like 19%.
Wow.
So Rolo's got a huge play action pass package, and he's got a huge play action boot package, which is awesome as well, because they run a lot of that outside zone from the pistol. If, you know, people don't know what outside zone I'm talking about, that's that long stretch play, mm-hmm. you know, where all five offensive linemen are stretching out to the right. If we're running it to the right, and the running back can either take that outside of our blockers, or he can cut that back. You know, you'll see Marshawn Lynch do that a lot. You know, you take that outside stretch play and you cut it back behind your blockers. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge, so we'll fake that outside zone. You know, say we're faking outside zone to the left, the quarterback will keep the ball and boot to the right. And that outside receiver on the right will run an 18-yard comeback, and then we'll have, you know, a drag on the left coming across of that. And the other really exciting thing is Rolo will use a tight end. That's something that I begged and wished and pleaded for to put in our air raid system, because you can run all of that air raid stuff with a tight end with his hand in the ground. You know, you can still run 95 with a tight end. So I think this is super exciting for our offense. Then the main differences you'll see are Rolo will run the ball. He will call to what the talent is on our offense. And looking at our offense right now, the talent on our offense is Max Borgi. So we're going to see, hopefully, Borgi average over 20 carries a game. And that's something that should excite the hell out of the fan base.
Right. Yeah, you know, Sean and I were talking the other day. I'll go to, you know, my quick, you know, positives about the hire, because it's not like I'm entirely negative. But, you know, one of the things that we talked about is that in terms of ingredients that you need to be successful at Washington State for football – you need to score points, and in basketball, it's the exact opposite. You need to be able to defend. And so, you know, bringing in a coach that not only is proven in being able to score points, but also has a system that can fit kind of the overall particularities of you know, our roster, is a really, really big deal. His overall approach to family first and, you know, building that community and that collective among the team, and being a father figure and a caretaker for kids,
That kind of stuff is going to play so well in the Islands. It's going to play really well in a lot of African-American homes. And it's going to play really well in those kind of rural communities where it is that you have, you know, some gems that may be a star lower simply because of the fact that they're playing in smaller schools. And therefore, you know, they're underrated because of the quality of competition and, you know, the scouts can't figure out about whether or not it's them or their competition that they're playing against. So he's going to be able, I think, especially on the offensive side of the ball, to be able to locate, you know, his OKGs, to be able to develop them and to be able to, you know, have a team that's going to play hard and as hard as Leach teams did, because Leach teams played for the most part really, really hard. The big caveat is that it's really easy in a coaching change to, you know, overlook the status of our defense and the defensive line that played against an Air Force team that was among the smallest offensive lines in college football and got absolutely manhandled. And the status of where it is that defense is, and, you know, Connor, you were, you know, you pointed out really early in the year this year that your view was, is that, you know, this was a team that was young, that was lacking confidence, and your view was that they were going to get better over time, particularly next year. And I hope that's the case. From my, you know, lay eyes, I see a defense that's trending towards one that's a cellar dweller defense. And they're going to need to be able to inject significant talent into that defense in order to be able to avoid a slide, especially when it is that you look at how well Oregon's recruiting and that they're on the rise, the talent level at Washington, the fact that Cal is returning 18 of 21 starters, the fact that Oregon State is already 2 years into their program rebuild. I think that there's just so much work to be done on the defensive side of the ball that was one of the reasons why it was that I was somewhat compelled by the idea of bringing somebody with an established reputation to be able to lead the program who is a defensive-minded coach, like a Grinch or like a Dave Aranda, as an example. But it's also the reason why it was that, you know, that I was hopeful that if we hired an offensive minded head coach, that we bring somebody in at a lower salary so that we could really throw a lot of money out towards somebody like a Rocky Long, or somebody, you know, that would be a high end defensive coordinator that could really attract defensive recruits into the program. And that to me is the million-dollar question. And it's not only, you know, over the long term. I really think it's about who we can bring in between now and fall camp, whether it's JCs, whether it's a transfer portal, between that and hiring in a really, really high quality defensive staff, I think is going to determine about how it is that the Rolo era develops.
Well, one thing we just don't know is what the assistant pool actually is. We have no idea how much money they have to spend and what they're going to spend it on as far as are they going to get a rock star DC? It's not out of the question. If you consider that, you know, the other thing is it's not 100% confirmed that he's making exactly $3 million. It's that Cook Center mentioned this the other day. It's been floated that's around $3 million, but we don't know if that's 2.8, 2.9, 2.75. We have no idea what that number actually is.
You know, declined, you know, Leach a salary increase in that last rollover because we don't really have any money. I think on principle, we're going to increase the salary pool just to be able to show, you know, that we're invested. And by the way, that our Cougar men's basketball team just upset the 8th ranked Ducks by 11 points at home.
That's nice.
Yeah,
that's
good.
That's huge.
Yeah.
The one thing that I wanted to talk about with what you just said, Sutra, is we need to realize as a fan base, we kind of need to take a step back and realize that the conference as a whole has really been down since 2015, especially since 2014. But, you know, the Arizonas, the Oregon States, the UCLAs, who else?
Arizona State.
Arizona State, Cal, especially. These teams that in from 2010 to 2014-15, you know, Oregon State went on a run there where they didn't win less than seven games, you know, for 5 years. Arizona was winning eight games a year, going 8-4 almost every year. Arizona State in 2013 almost played in the national playoff, like the first year of the playoff, or the year before it. You know, they were that year where they beat Notre Dame and everybody. I mean, they won 11 games that year, if not 11, at least 10. Oregon was playing for national titles. UCLA was winning 8 or 9 games. These last 4 to 5 years, those teams have really been down, you know, especially the Arizona's been awful. UCLA has been atrocious. Oregon State's been the worst team in the conference. Cal has barely been bowl eligible. We've had a really lucky stretch of the conference really being down. And to Sutra's point, if his point is correct that our defense is trending downwards and we're going to end up being cellar dwellers, we've got a big time problem, because those teams aren't going to stay down for that long. I mean, UCLA is going to get back to winning football games. They've got a great coach, and they're in Los Angeles. Who the heck doesn't want to go to Los Angeles as an 18-year-old? You know, Oregon State is really trending upwards with Jonathan Smith. Arizona State is hugely trending upwards with Herm Edwards. The conference is about 2 to 3 years away from being back to where it was from 2010 to 2014, which was damn near the second best conference in the nation behind the SEC. Now, obviously, we never had the team that was winning, you know, national titles like the SEC did, you know, or Big 12 team playing for national titles. But we had, from top to bottom, the Pac-12 was probably the best conference in the country for that 4 year stretch, 4 to 5 year stretch. And frankly, as of late, the conference has been, for a lack of a nicer word, it's been terrible. Once the conference gets back to where it should be and where it was, if our defense doesn't get shorn up, we're going to go back to winning 3 to 4 to 5 games a year. And this is something that's going to happen really quickly. I mean, UCLA is on the brink of winning 8 to 10 games again. Oregon State is on the brink of winning 7 to 8 games again. Arizona State's already there. USC is, you know, getting
lying and waiting.
You know, as soon as they get Clay Helton out of there and get an actual head coach, you know, USC is going to go back to what it was. You know, we are really in a very, very, very crucial point right here, where if we don't figure out our defense, we are going to go back to where we were when Doba got fired and Wolf got hired, of barely winning 2 to 3 games a year. I mean, we are this is probably the most crucial point of WSU's football program in the last probably 30 years. And, you know, I don't want to go too long here. Sorry if I'm getting a little long-winded, but I don't know everything about it, but that law that was